Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you guys part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you for downloading. Thank you guys for sharing. Thank you guys for subscribing to Culture and Conversations. Before we get too far into the episode, please take a moment to go by your favorite place to listen to podcasts and leave Culture and Conversations a 5-star review. That can be done in Apple Podcast for sure. Also, if you haven't subscribed to Culture and Conversations and you're just listening to this somewhere, somehow on the internet, please take a moment to go and find Culture and Conversations where people listen to podcasts at. We are on Spotify, we are on iTunes, we are in Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, we're just everywhere. So just go ahead and subscribe. That way you get the episodes when they come out. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I have a great conversation about a passion of mine, a hobby of mine, gardening, with my friend Neil Sambo. And Neil stops by to share his mutual passion of gardening with us, and also to geek out about growing tomatoes. Yeah, that's right. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Thank you for tuning in. Yes, my name is Jameson Smallwood, and this is Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys for supporting the show by listening. And if you haven't subscribed to the show, I want to reiterate, please take a moment and find the show inside of a place where you listen to podcasts and hit subscribe. We have a great series of episodes coming up on Culture and Conversations. I'm going to be talking in depth about gardening. Yes, gardening. I started gardening a couple years ago and I love it. And I am looking forward to my fourth garden. So we are going to focus in on some episodes around that topic. And it'll give me a chance to just share another passion I have with you guys and bring you into my world even more. So this episode I've recorded with my friend Neil Sambo is going to focus in on introducing you to some concepts in gardening. And Neil is really passionate about gardening, and it's a really good hobby that I'm glad I share with him. So I'm going to give you guys an opportunity to hear that interview after we talk about a little bit of what's going on with the show. I'm going to be traveling to PodFest 2019 down in Orlando, Florida. And PodFest is a gathering of podcasters who are looking to grow their brand, to develop their podcast, to help other podcasters be better at podcasting. And I'm going with the intention of developing Culture and Conversations and making it better. So I looked forward to bringing you guys content and interviews and talking with people, and also still trying to keep my commitments to the show. So I'm going to go ahead and program out the next couple of episodes and get them published and give them to you guys so that you guys can listen to Culture and Conversations. I'm still going to even try to do the group chat, hashtag the group chat down in Orlando while I'm out there seeing the sights of the city and taking in the conference. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that yet, but you know, I'm a podcaster, so where there's a will, there's a way. And guys, thank you for the encouragement. For seriously, I really appreciate all that you've done that helped the show get to the point where it's at. I see the downloads going up slowly and surely. I see people sharing it. I see people listening in the various cities. I see you even listening when you're on vacation. I can see all of that traffic, and I really appreciate you guys checking out the show. And I just hope that I continue to give you guys the value that you deserve with Culture and Conversations. And if you need anything from me to add value to your life, to change the show up, or even to be on the show, you can definitely reach out to me, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. Also on the show, I want to focus you guys' minds towards what we're doing with the Facebook page, Culture and Conversations on Facebook. And I have started doing a weekly live stream called hashtag the group chat. And it really evolved out of my efforts to give people who follow Culture and Conversations on Facebook bonus material so that they find value in subscribing to the page and also interacting with the page and sharing the content. And little did I know, it has blossomed into a pretty interesting and thought-provoking and funny and hilarious show. So if you're interested in seeing another side of the podcast and also seeing my pretty face every week, Thursday nights, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on the Facebook page for Culture and Conversations. And you can check out hashtag the group chat. And it's very interactive. I take phone calls. I have people obviously commenting during the live stream and chatting with each other and chatting with me. So it's very back and forth, and it's a really good experience. And I'm looking forward to building that out more and more. I thought it was just going to be kind of like extra, but it's proving to be very evolved. So I'm looking forward to you guys having that as a part of your listening and viewing experience as well. Also, I want you to go over to YouTube and search for Culture and Conversations, and you'll find the YouTube channel where I'm posting my video episodes called The Sit Down, where people come to my home and we do video episodes of Culture and Conversations called The Sit Down. So I've just posted a recent episode with James Hammond, and you guys can find that content over there on YouTube. And it's just another way of adding value to your podcast consuming experience. So yeah, we've got three things. We got the Culture and Conversations audio podcast. We've got hashtag the group chat on Facebook for those people who follow along on Facebook. And we've got The Sit Down, which is a great show happening on Culture and Conversations. And also, just want you to know that in addition to all of that, as if I don't have enough already on my plate, I've also started to record the ministry work I do at the church that I'm a part of. And I'm reviving a podcast called the Renewed Mind Podcast. So if you're a person of faith and you want to listen along and hear a Christian perspective and hear me teach about Christian topics and biblical topics and talk about how they intersect with the culture and how they intersect with your life and my life, then yeah, that's the podcast for you. The Renewed Mind Podcast. So if you go inside of any place where you listen to podcasts and you type in Jameson Smallwood, you'll find that podcast as well. I'm getting ready to syndicate it out to the other channels, such as Spotify and Stitcher and all these other places to make sure that it's listed. But I want you guys to make sure that if you're interested in that and you want to hear my passion about my faith as a Christian, then you can listen to the Renewed Mind Podcast. Also, something I haven't really been mentioning on other shows, but yeah, if there's an opportunity for you to support the show, I don't do sponsors and I don't do Patreon yet, but I do have a way you can support the show. If you want to make a donation to support the show, I will take your donation and use it to pay for hosting and use it to pay for equipment. But if you don't want to make a donation to the show, that's fine too. But for those people who want to support the show in some way financially and just make a contribution, or hey, just buy me a cup of coffee, you can do so via Cash App. My cash tag is Smallwood Media. That is Smallwood Media. Smallwood Media. And I hope that you guys would consider supporting the show financially, because everything that I do it for you, and it all goes back into the show. So with that said, man, let me get to this episode with Neil Sambol. And I want to give you guys an opportunity to hear what Neil thinks about gardening, and also let you guys know more about this great hobby that we both have. Hey, Culture and Conversations family. This is Jameson Smallwood, and I have on the phone my good friend Neil. Neil is a former coworker and one of my former bosses, and he is an avid gardener. And when I thought about doing an episode on gardening, I decided who better to talk to than Neil. So let's welcome to the conversation, Neil. Hey, Neil, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you, Jameson?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. So I wanted to kind of ask you some different questions just in general about your interest in gardening. So I think my first one is, you know, when did you start gardening and kind of what got you into it?
Well, I can say it's probably in my blood. For some reason, the men in my family have gardened since I was a child. And I remember my grandfather having a garden and my uncle has a garden. I'm not sure why the women are not as interested, but it's always been a guy thing. And then I ironically worked at a garden center for 8 years as I worked my way through college. So I learned all about gardening and landscape shrubs and vegetables. And for some reason, I have always been really drawn to plant things that I can eat. So I don't know why vegetable gardening is my number one thing to do.
Well, I think for me, the reason I vegetable garden is because if I'm going to produce something with all that work and effort in the garden, I want to put it in my mouth and eat it. So
yeah, I don't blame you. And one of the benefits of gardening is that, especially if you, when you get a little more deeply into it and you plant from seed, there are a lot of varieties available to someone who's willing to start from seed that are not available at the local garden center. So you have literally over 900 varieties of heirloom tomatoes to choose from.
Wow.
Versus, you know, the 10 stock big boy, early girl stuff that you find in the garden center.
Yeah.
So there is something to that. I actually have a 1 year I did a research, because my garden is basically my laboratory. I consider myself a scientist.
Cool, cool.
And I have a spreadsheet, and I planted 60 different, 6-0 types of tomatoes.
Wow.
Two of each variety. And I did taste tests and productivity and comparison, and to this day I still use that spreadsheet to determine what varieties of tomatoes I plant.
That sounds like the Farmer's Almanac by Neil. That's what it sounds like.
Yes. It's a little over the top, but I'm also an engineer. So if anybody is an engineer who likes to garden, they might be interested in the square foot gardening method, who it was invented by an engineer in his retirement days. That's another thing that got me interested. I used to watch that on public broadcasting when I was a kid working at the garden center. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, produces really interesting results that you can eat and taste. And, you know, my wife is a great cook, and I like to eat, so
yeah, yeah.
I like to eat good things.
No, you mentioned square foot gardening, and that is what got me into gardening. One of my coworkers and now my boss, he started talking about gardening and in the office. And, you know, I grew up in the South. I grew up in the South, and I grew up in South Georgia. And we garden, we farm, we do a lot of work, you know, to grow stuff. And when he mentioned starting a garden, I said, that'd be a good project. That's something I haven't done at the house yet. And, you know, so he talked about square foot gardening and sent me the book and, the square foot garden book. And when we say square foot garden for the listeners, what we're talking about is basically creating a garden bed that we call a raised bed, where instead of you digging in the ground, you have a container, and you can build the container out of, you know, wood and other building materials, but you subdivide the plot that you set aside for the garden into square foot patches. And then based on those square foot patches, you can, you know, separate your different vegetables and crops that you're trying to grow. And you can also allocate the space according to, you know, how much space things typically need based on the experience of people who do square foot gardening. So, so it's a very approachable methodology for gardening if you're interested in starting a garden. So Neil, so you've got this great spreadsheet, and you've done all these experiments. Where do you talked about seeds and how if you grow from seed, you have options that you don't have when you go to the store and shop for plants.
Yes, sir.
Where do you get your seeds from? Or at least where did you get your initial stock of seeds from?
I have to admit that my single greatest passion for things to grow are tomatoes.
Okay.
And the reason why is that anything I can buy in the supermarket, I have a very small garden. I have a very small plot of land. So anything that I can buy from the supermarket that tastes as good as anything I grow from my garden, I buy from the supermarket. Well, we both know that homegrown tomatoes are incredibly different from the ones you buy in the store.
Yes, this
is true. So those, for me, that is the most valuable crop to grow because the difference is so huge.
Yeah.
And so there's one site called Tomato Fest. I think it's www.tomatofest.com. And they have, I believe, about 900 types of tomatoes. And they sell different like collections. And they have Gary Ibsen, I think, is the owner of the site. And he has recommendations, his favorite black tomato, his favorite yellow tomato, his favorite pink tomato, and that sort of thing. So I just experiment and try different ones, and I read the reviews. And I have some of my favorites, so I'm glad to share it with you if you want. 1884 is my favorite sort of a pink tomato. It's an old-fashioned kind of a tart tomato. It's a beefsteak, very productive. Ivan is another one that's sort of interesting. It's was almost extinct twice, and they have brought it back. It's actually got a Facebook page, the Ivan Rescue Project, which where they rescue tomato. I love gardeners because they're very, very serious about these things. So Ivan is actually a great one because it really tastes like an old-fashioned tomato. It's much more productive than Brandywine. Let's see. There are a few other sites. I'd have to look. Tomato Fest is probably my single best source for tomato seeds. Cherokee Purple is one of our favorite darker tomatoes. There's another one called that my wife loves called Paul Robeson.
Okay.
That's a very dark tomato, but it's got a really rich flavor to it. It's a very nice tomato. And as far as yellows, we sort of struggle with yellows because they don't really taste very much like a tomato. But we like Golden Jubilee, I think, is our favorite for the yellows. Although Kellogg's Breakfast, incredible name, incredible productivity, beautiful tomato, doesn't taste so great, but it's a really pretty tomato.
Oh, wow.
So if you're interested in the way something looks more than the way it tastes, then Kellogg's Breakfast might be a good choice.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the purple Cherokee tomato. I grew those this year, and I was really blown away by how productive they are and also how just how resilient they are, too, you know. Mm-hmm. So what I did this year was I planted two of those plants in my garden bed. And I didn't realize that they were indeterminate tomatoes. An indeterminate tomato, for the listener, is a tomato plant that grows all season long and it produces fruit all season long until the frost comes along and kills it. And I didn't realize that, Neil. So when I was in there, you know, thinking that, okay, this first great crop of tomatoes I'm getting, that's going to be it. And boy, was I wrong. I went out there and saw that even though I had pruned it down extremely aggressively, it came back with a ton of fruit. And if I had taken better care of the plant this year, I probably would have got tomatoes the whole season if I had just, taken better care of the plant. So,
and, you know, one of the things that drives me besides flavor is productivity. Because, you know, a tomato that produces one or two tomatoes, you know, it doesn't excite me so much, and that's why I tend to steer clear of Brandywine.
Okay.
But other ones, like Cherokee Purple, are very productive. 1884 is very productive. Ivan is extraordinarily productive.
Yeah.
So various mortgage lifters, there's about 20 different types of mortgage lifter varieties. Those are interesting as well. Radiator Charlie is probably the most common one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you're talking to me now because I do want to bring up another point. I am a huge tomato gardening fan, but one of my other favorite things is I call it all-season gardening, and I do have a Facebook page devoted to it.
Okay.
But basically, in Georgia and pretty much anywhere in the South and even parts of the North, you can grow vegetables all year long.
Oh, wow.
With some protection in the North. In Georgia, it's actually not hard at all. And there are some vegetables like spinach. You cannot kill spinach. Now is the time to plant spinach. Now is the time to plant broccoli. Now is the time to plant lettuce in Georgia. And you will get harvests all winter long. Mm. I remember one time my parents came to visit from New York, and I went out on our deck where I have some planters, and I harvested a bunch of lettuce, red leaf lettuce, green leaf lettuce. I came back in with these beautiful fresh heads of lettuce, and my parents said, "What, do you have a cooler out there or something?" And I said, "No, this is my garden. I just picked these lettuce right off in February."
Wow. Yeah, so, you know, with the greens, I've tried them at different times of year, being a novice and not knowing any better. And, you know, one of the things that you have to deal with for the listeners is that when you plant, you know, lettuce, spinach, things that I guess we could describe as being in the, what family of plant is that? It's not the mustard plant. It's the,
goosefoot. I think spinach is actually in the goosefoot family, which is weird, but I think it is.
But your leafy vegetables like lettuce, and if you're into southern cooking, collard greens, mustard greens, lettuce, I mean spinach, those things will bolt when the temperature in the soil reaches a certain certain temperature. And bolting is when the plant goes and produces seeds and flowers and stuff. And it makes the plant inedible, the leaves. Yeah. So
it's bitter. It becomes very bitter.
Yes.
And that's oxalic acid. The plant is producing that to protect itself because it's trying to reproduce, and it doesn't want you eating it just as it's going to reproduce. So
that's
it makes itself inedible.
That's it. So then the cooler temperatures, it sort of tricks the plant into thinking that it's still early spring and that it's not time to produce the seeds that it has to produce. So the cooler temperatures basically slow the plant's bolting and reproductive process down so that you can harvest more leaves longer.
Yeah, so. That's the truth. And if you're a lazy gardener like I am, you can, you don't have to worry so much about heat and the dry temperature, the dryness, because the plants grow much more slowly over the winter, so that the normal rain takes care of your garden. You don't have to worry about watering it. You don't have to worry about weeding it. You don't have to worry about bugs, because there aren't any. The cabbage looper, that green little cabbage worm, is the bane of my existence when I try to grow any brassicas or coal crops during the year. In the wintertime, you never see it. So it's a wonderful time to garden. I highly recommend it.
But yeah, to your point, this time of year is great because insects become dormant, and there are a number of plants and vegetables that you can grow that's available to us. And, what are some of the things that you have in your garden or that you're planning on putting in your garden this time of year, Neil, going into the winter?
Sure. So pretty much all of the brassicas or the coal crops, which includes the broccoli, spinach, spinach you can plant now. It's not a brassica, though. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, turnips, collard greens, pretty much all of those, Brussels sprouts, those are all in the cabbage. Those are all in the cabbage family. They're all very closely related to each other. They're very winter hardy, especially Brussels sprouts. And they also have a fairly long growing season, so you can grow them over the winter. They also are very, very hardy. There are certain types of kale, like there's a Siberian kale, and that are, this snows, there's an ice storm, doesn't matter. The next day it melts and the plant just pops back up. Spinach is the same way. I like to plant Bloomsdale Longstanding is my favorite spinach.
Okay.
It's about 150 years old. It's a very nice spinach. It's got little savoyed leaves. And I had an ice storm one time, and I had a quarter of an inch thick of ice on my spinach. I said, oh, that's it. I'm done. The next day it melted. This is Georgia. And sure enough, the spinach just popped back like nothing ever happened.
Oh, wow.
So spinach is great. It's very, very cold hardy. Bloomsdale is a very easy variety to find. Garden centers have the seeds. It grows very, very easily. Let's see, lettuce. This is a great time of year to grow lettuce because you don't have to worry about it turning bitter going to seed. One of my favorite varieties is an old French variety called Marvel of the Four Seasons. It sounds even more beautiful in French, like Marvel de Quatre, whatever. But I don't speak French very well.
Wow!
But it's a beautiful sort of red butterhead. It's sort of a red and green butterhead. It's very flavorful and it stands up pretty well. The one thing about lettuce, though, it doesn't stand up to ice storms, ice and snow, as well as pretty much everything else.
Sure.
So you have to protect it a little bit. If there's an ice storm, you have to just cover it, because you'll have some die-off. But the cold doesn't seem to bother it. It just doesn't like ice storms.
Okay. With all these different seeds that we can grow, I think we need to help our listeners kind of think through this just at a high level.
Yeah.
So a little bit of our conversation is going to be somewhat introductory. So Neil, what is the difference between an heirloom seed and then I guess just a non-heirloom seed? What do we mean when we say heirloom seed?
So heirlooms, there are actually different types of heirlooms. There's an heirloom in general means an old seed.
Okay.
It's been around, I think, for 60 years or more. Is the definition. There are commercial heirlooms, like Rutgers is a good example of a commercial heirloom. It was I think it was starting, it was grown in the 40s in New Jersey, and it was a commercially produced heirloom. There are some other ones, too, that were used to produce ketchup or what have you. Then there are family heirlooms that were passed down from, you know, one person to another for years. A lot of those have names like Essler's Mortgage Lifter kind of thing. Those are family names that are associated. And then there are some others that have just been around sometimes for hundreds of years, and people don't know exactly where they came from. Like Cherokee Purple is one of those that came, they believe it came through the Cherokee, but they don't have any more details than that. So it's sort of a tomato with a history.
Mm-hmm.
One that I'm growing this year is about 125 years old. It's called Ferris Wheel. And
oh,
it's,
yeah,
it's really a wonderful tomato. You've probably seen some of my pictures of Ferris Wheel. Very productive, very good tasting tomato. But it was introduced in, I think, the 1880s.
Okay.
And it's supposed to look like a Ferris wheel, but it tastes incredible. And it's very productive. So the difference, really, between the hybrids, or a lot of the new tomatoes are hybrids, or a lot of the new vegetables, is that you can't save the seed, meaning that they specifically breed one variety of tomato with another variety of tomato to make this, to make the hybrid, like Big Boy or Better Boy, are hybrids. And so if you take the seeds from those tomatoes, they'll revert back to one of the parents, or you'll get something sort of in between that's really not so good.
Oh, okay.
The open, sometimes another phrase is open pollinated for heirlooms, and that usually means that if you take the seeds breed true. So you can take the seeds from tomatoes, you can take the seeds from lettuce, you can take the seeds from spinach, and you can plant them the next year or save them up in your refrigerator, plant them 5 years from now, and you'll still have the same, you know, whatever it was that you planted.
That
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That makes perfect sense. You know, people oftentimes will see that the label, oh, this is an heirloom vegetable, when you're in the grocery store, because they've become a little bit more, you know, popular in the commercial grocery stores. And it just really goes back to how long has that seed been around. And it also helps you to establish if that seed is coming from a genetically modified plant. So do we want to always highlight that for people who are conscientious about buying genetically modified plants, even though you can argue about that in on another podcast episode, if that's really a concern or not. So we got the heirloom piece established. We talked a little bit about square foot gardening, you know, how, in terms of building a garden, how do we look at it, and what's the easiest way to get into building a garden? I have some thoughts about that, but I want to know what your thoughts are.
Sure. Well, the first thing I would suggest is not biting off more than you can chew.
Okay.
Meaning you don't want to build a garden. A lot of people in the spring or wintertime have these really grandiose ideas about what a garden is.
Sure.
But then you have to go out there and water it in 95-degree heat in Georgia, and the mosquitoes are attacking. So you want to start small and make sure that it's something that is not going to become a burden to you. You want the garden, in my personal opinion, should be a joy.
Yes.
It should be a place of order and peace and beauty that you go to in the morning and you watch the hummingbirds sip out of your bird feeder, or you watch a bee on one of your flowers, and then you pick a tomato, and at the end of the day, you're maybe watering it. So first and foremost, for me, you don't want to make the garden a burden, just something that you're going to dread. Oh, God, I got to water the garden again. It's going to take me 3 hours.
That's true.
So that would be my first piece of advice. And then it makes everything else easier because you're starting smaller. And then once you have a feel for it, you can say, well, I want to expand the garden next year, and maybe I want to add these new things or what have you. For soil, you know, you can talk about possibly a raised bed. I do recommend the square foot method. The main reason for that is it's very practical. You don't need a lot of space. It's a very high yield, low space, low energy mechanism or system of planting. Everything is within a 4-foot space, so you don't have to reach out very far. It's really good for older people or people who perhaps are, you know, don't have the reach as the, you know, of younger people. You don't have to plow up a 2-acre garden. My father-in-law had a 2-acre garden and used to plow it every year, and that's a lot of garden.
Yeah,
so that's another huge possibility. The lasagna method is a fun, if you want to prepare the soil and you want to do so fairly inexpensively. Lasagna is basically just putting layers. You put a layer of newspaper to block the weeds, and then you put some compost down, and you put some manure down, and you put some peat moss down, and maybe another layer of newspaper, and then you repeat the whole thing again. That's lasagna in a nutshell. And before you know it, you have a decent soil.
Yeah.
The challenge with Georgia's soil, in all honesty, is this very dense red clay stuff. And it doesn't have a lot of organic material in it, and it's actually quite hard to grow. I prefer significant amounts of organic material, compost, peat moss, cow manure, to supplement and augment the soil. I would rather have a tiny little square foot garden that's incredibly productive than a huge 2-acre garden that I barely get any yield out of that I have to water the heck out of.
Yeah.
That's my personal philosophy. I'm a very intensive, high yield, small space gardener. That's how I operate.
Yeah. It makes sense too, right? Because if you measure the productivity of your garden by the, you know, let's say the weight of all your produce divided by the square footage or the acreage, if you will, then that's an easy metric for determining if you're a productive gardener or not. And, you know, me, I have an 8x4 foot garden bed that I do my primary gardening in. And just so the listeners can have an idea, I would say I probably this year produced, probably roughly 30 pounds of tomatoes out of that garden bed, you know, from 4 plants. And that's not even all the things I was growing in that bed. So, you know, and once again, I could have gotten more if I had just taken better care of it. One of the things I was going to suggest too for the listeners is that if you want to get into gardening, the square foot method is a great way of approaching it. And you can also, because it's a square foot garden, you can also expand it relatively easily because it's just square footage. You just add a little bit more lumber to your garden bed, and now you have another 2 or 3 cells that you can plant in, or 4 cells you can plant in, depending on how you built it out. And it's really approachable. Also, garden pots is another way of starting a garden if you just want to, you know, plant some things in a planter and see it grow. But the trick with a planter is that because it's such, depending on the size of the planter, it can really require a lot of water. And it also requires you growing the right size plant in the planter because the roots can become root bound where they just grow into a really tight ball and the plant struggles to pull up nutrients from that soil.
True. For example, you might grow lettuce very easily in a window box, but I wouldn't grow a tomato in one.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. That's a good point. Like an herb garden is a great way to kind of get started with gardening too. And I know you were telling me on Facebook about some different experiments you were doing with basil. So how has your basil experiments been going, Neil?
Very well. I've been doing them for years, and I feel like they're pretty much definitive at this point. So this is another type of gardening. It's called companion planting.
Okay.
And the idea is that you plant one plant in close proximity to another, and in some way it augments the other plant. It helps the other plant. Sometimes it's nutrients. So some people may have heard of planting beans with corn because the beans have the nitrogen-fixing bacteria, and the corn uses a lot of the Three Sisters is a perfect example of that. I don't know if have you heard of the Three Sisters.
Vaguely.
It's a Native American companion planting system where you basically grow beans and you around corn. And the beans fix the nitrogen for the corn and then grow up the corn as a stalk.
Mm-hmm.
And then you plant squash in the bottom. And squash keeps the rodents from crawling up and eating the ears of corn. It's called the Three Sisters.
Oh, wow.
Probably the single oldest companion gardening or companion planting mechanism. I use a simpler one because I'm not a fan of squash and I don't have room for corn.
Mm-hmm.
And that is I plant basil with tomatoes. And basil has a really interesting tendency to deter the tomato hornworm moth.
Yeah.
So if you've ever seen a hornworm, it's this big old green worm. It's ugly. Tobacco hornworms will also eat tomatoes. They're smaller and they're brown.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want these guys on your tomatoes. So what happens is I plant a basil usually within 6 or 8 feet of a tomato plant, and the hornworm is whether it gets confused and it can't. It's a huge moth that flies at night, so you never see them lay the eggs, but they go by smell. So either the basil confuses the hornworm moth and it doesn't smell the tomatoes, or it deters it. It doesn't like the smell of basil and maybe just flies away.
Sure.
That's great. Fly onto someone else's garden. You're not going to get mine.
Exactly.
I have not had a hornworm all year long, and I have had about 20 tomato plants in my garden. Not a single hornworm this year. I think it's a record.
Wow.
So that's one example. Another way of companion planting is you want to plant something that's going to draw a beneficial insect into your garden. For example, I like to plant flowers in my garden because not only are they pretty, but they draw pollinating insects like bees and, you know, other pollinators into my garden. And they're just really pretty, too. So I always plant marigolds, and I have a thing for gallardias, and coneflowers are very pretty. So I like to do that as well. So those are some ways that I like to, without using chemicals, I can deter or deflect bugs from my garden. Bad bugs and attract good bugs. That's the name of the game.
Yeah, one of the things about companion planting is that it helps promote a symbiotic relationship among plants. And
yes.
That's really helpful because it gives you a lot of organic benefits where you don't have to use pesticides and chemicals mm-hmm. to keep those bugs yeah. out or help the plants along. Yeah. And you get the beautiful benefits too that come from just having a pretty flower in your garden. And that's really always enjoyable when you see, you know, like yeah. you said, that kind of calm environment in your garden where you can observe beauty as well as productivity. I love that balance.
Yeah, so. It is pretty. In full disclosure, I am an organic gardener.
Okay.
I did sell chemicals for many years when I worked at the garden center, and one of the things that has convinced me is that a lot of those, probably most of the chemicals we used to sell, are now banned. So it occurred to me that, you know, I wanted to see what was going into my food and what was going into my body and the body of my family, so that's why I really switched. But I have to tell you, even more tangibly, I find organic produce tastes better.
I do.
Maybe it's just a me thing, but it just tastes great. The philosophical trick to organic gardening is to realize that you're not feeding the plant, you're feeding the soil.
Yeah.
And when you feed the soil feeds the plant.
That's it.
So I have a compost bin, and the compost bin is the workhorse of my garden. And I drink a lot of coffee, so those coffee grounds go right in the compost bin and eggshells and whenever I do a change of rotation in crops, like I'm getting ready for my fall crop, I always basically raid my compost bin and take out a bunch of really, you know, vital soil and earthworms and all sorts of beneficial microorganisms, and I put it in my soil, and my plants are really, really happy. So I'm not, I don't have any problem with people who choose to continue gardening chemically, but generally speaking, I try and stay away from it.
No, I agree. I'm definitely organic gardener when it comes to pesticides. I worry the most about those because I always mm-hmm. feel like if they can kill a bug, they can kill me, or at least make
yeah.
my body do things I don't want it to do. And,
yeah.
The last two seasons, I've used Miracle-Gro, which is a synthetic fertilizer, which is a chemical.
Yeah.
I guess the distinction I always make when I talk about chemicals in gardening is
yeah.
that when I say chemical, I mean that it's a man-made product
yeah.
that someone went in a laboratory or in an industrial lab and distilled it from chemical reactions to produce it, as opposed to nature kind of giving us the raw elements that we need for the garden.
Yeah.
And, one of the things that I've tried to do too is when you talk about the philosophy around organic gardening, and this is where I become a little bit of a hippie, is, you know, I realized, I think maybe in the middle of the first season, that it's okay not to get 100% yield from everything.
Yes.
I share my garden with whatever's in my backyard. So, for the listeners, I have had deer come back there and eat my okra plants. And I didn't know it was deer. I said, "What is what's eating the leaves off of my plants?" You know, but it's the deer coming back there doing it. And then also, I fell in love in a love hate relationship with my chipmunks I have, and they now they come and eat the tomatoes, and you know. But what I did was I fenced off my tomatoes using some construction wire, which is basically like smaller whole chicken wire, and. But then I took the cracked ones and the ones that had kind of begun to rot, and I took those and gave them to the chipmunks. I said, "Here you go, guys." You know, and so I think if you're going to be an organic gardener, the mindset to have is you're not going to get 100% of everything that your garden produces, but you also are sharing it with nature. And if you share with nature, then you're going to get some. You're going to get a better product for yourself at the end of it, as opposed to spraying everything down with chemicals and deterrents that you know that, and that's just not the way it's supposed to work, I don't think.
Absolutely. I give you two examples. One is that we grow curly parsley, and one year we saw all of these worms on the curly parsley. What are they? We looked them up. They're black swallowtail butterflies.
Oh, wow.
They're beautiful. So we grow extra parts. So our answer to that is we grow, instead of one tub, we grow two tubs of parsley. We can only eat one tub, and the black swallowtails eat the rest. And they are beautiful. And the kids watch them grow and mature and fly away. It's really been a learning experience.
Yeah.
The other exciting thing is that we have these tree frogs. We're sort of near a water source.
Okay.
And these tree frogs, we leave our light on at night. It's like a little bug light. It's yellow. It's not supposed to attract insects, but it does anyway. Well, these tree frogs have figured out that there are bugs that are drawn to the light. And so they go in, and there are like six or eight of them that hang around. They're beautiful green frogs. I'll take a picture of them for you. And they just hang out waiting for the bugs to come to them. And so the thing about frogs are sort of interesting. Frogs and toads are actually very, very susceptible to toxins in the environment. So if you have frogs and toads in your garden and around your garden, you know it's a pretty safe place for animals. And in my personal opinion, I like to be animal safe. I don't want a bird or a bee to come into my garden and get poisoned. But it also lets me know that the food that comes out of my garden is also safe for me.
Exactly.
So, so these are beautiful little green frogs, and we just watch them every night, congregate on the light. Sometimes they land on the light bulb itself, and they just stick to it.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So, Neil, as we wrap up, man, do you have any, any maybe websites that you want to plug that you kind of help curate, or any Facebook groups or anything like that?
Facebook group, and it's closed, but the only reason it's closed is because sometimes people go on groups and post things that are inappropriate.
Sure.
And this is just a way for me to be a gatekeeper and to make sure that we're talking about gardening and not politics and other stuff.
I understand.
So if you want to hear about gardening, it's called All Season Gardening, because that's one of my favorite things, is to talk about gardening 365. And let's see, that's really the only page I have. There are some books that I can recommend that I've recommended on my gardening group. One is called Companion Planting by Gertrude Frank, and it's available, it's out of print, but it's available for $5 or so on Amazon.
Okay.
Don't get the hardcover, because that's not the right book. It's a soft cover book. It's about $5. It comes from the UK.
Okay.
Because she's German, actually, and this was an English translation of a German book. But she's invented her own companion gardening system, which is really brilliant. She's an older like a German grandmother, and she feeds her family out of her garden.
Oh, wow.
I mean, she's probably passed on now, but the book is really brilliant. It's one of the greatest original companion planting books I've ever seen. There's also an author that I really, really like. His name is Elliot Coleman, and he has a farm in Maine, and it's an organic farm. It's a small, like, 5-acre farm. And he actually sells produce out of his farm. But he also writes books and invents farm machinery and mechanisms for planting all year long in Maine.
Oh, wow.
So he's got a book called All Season, I think it's called All Season Gardening or All Season Planting or the Four Season Grower or something like that.
Okay.
And that's what I named my group after as sort of a reference to him. He's a great author. I think he's got a new version of his The New Organic Grower. I think it's the third edition. It just came out.
Cool.
And then, of course, there's the Mel Bartholomew, the one about the square foot gardening.
Yep.
And I have to admit, I think actually that his older book that's now out of print that you can probably get for $2 on Amazon is probably his single best book. So the old black and white one, before he put out the color ones, those are really great.
Okay. Awesome. And what I'll do for the listeners is I'll link to all of that stuff in the show notes so they can find it and just get to it real easy. Sure. So, yeah.
I also thought of another website that's West Coast Seeds, where I buy seeds from. They have a lot of lettuce and spinach and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And they're from the West Coast, but they're very reasonably priced. And they ship pretty inexpensively. And I forget, there was another one that I might remember, but those, and then Tomato Fest. Those are two of the places where I get my seeds from.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm going to throw out there rareseeds.com. That's where I get my stuff from. So
yes, that's part of, what is that? It's part of another site, I think. Yeah. Rare Seeds is, I forget, it's owned by somebody else. It's another known, like Reamer Seeds or something like that.
Okay, cool. So, Neil, I want to just thank you, man, for taking time to be a part of Culture and Conversations. And I'm going to just tell everybody, hey, man, next season, start gardening. You know, next summer. And not next summer, next spring, start gardening.
Yeah. You know, you can't do anything wrong. Think of it as an experiment. Try it. See what happens.
Yeah. You may get some really delicious stuff that comes out your garden, and you'll be like, man, why didn't I do this sooner?
That's the truth. It's a lot easier than most people realize.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, Neil, thank you again, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jameson.
Hey, guys, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you guys for listening to Culture and Conversations. If you want to interact with the show on Facebook, remember, Culture and Conversations. If you want to have a more intimate experience with Culture and Conversations on Facebook, be sure to check out Culture and Conversations Podcast, which is the Facebook group. Also, hashtag the group chat on Facebook, my weekly live stream every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. We're going to get it popping. We're going to have fun. We're going to make you laugh. We're going to make you think. And I've got some great callers and members of the group chat. So we want to make sure that you guys have a chance to interact with each other, and that brings you together around the show. Also on Instagram, Culture and Conversations is the Instagram page. And also, lastly, if you want to send me an email, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. We've got some great content coming up next in store for you guys. And as my goddaughter would say, yeah, guys, you guys be good out there. Stay tuned, man. Culture and Conversations is going to get this thing popping in 2019. We're only 2 months in, and we're still rocking and rolling. So I can't wait, guys. Peace.